Warm welcome to episode 120 of the Sussex by the Sea podcast. I'm your host Chris Saverick. On episode 120, we're joined by Football Supporters Association man Richard Irving. We talk fan ownership, what that really means, how fans can make that happen. We also talk the governance and health of the football pyramid. And then we've got the SBTS Isthmian Prem fan roundtable. Lots discussed and 8 clubs from the Prem represented. Enjoy, SBTS fans. Now over to the FSA's Richard Irving. Anyway, it gives me great pleasure to introduce episode 120 of the Sussex by the Sea podcast. And, well, I'm very pleased to have, and I'm going to be very interested in what Richard's got to say. Richard Irving from the Football Supporters Association. His title, that's a very fancy title, was the Network Manager of community-owned clubs. Before we get started, Richard, how the devil are you?
I'm very well, thank you very much indeed, Chris.
Excellent. So, for people that don't know what the Football Supporters Association is and kind of what its kind of remit is, please, can you just sort of fill us in a little bit for those that don't know?
Certainly can, yeah. So, the FSA came out of the merger of the Football Supporters Federation and Supporters Direct back in 2019. The FSF was previously called the FSA, and we go back into the mists of time and the 50 odd years of supporter involvement and supporter organisations in this country. But those two organisations, the FSF and Supporters Direct, had very different remits. The FSF was to look at fan experiences, the match day experience, ticketing, all of those sorts of things. Supporters Direct was very much about governance. And was set up to look at developing supporters' trusts and supporter ownership. So after the merger, the organisation came together. The FSF side, if you like, still works on exactly those things, but we are front and centre of everything to do with football governance. And probably the time when people would have seen us the most is around the Crouch Report, the Fan Led Review. And now the installation of an independent regulator. So you will see our chair, our vice chair and our CEO quite often being interviewed on TV about very much things around the governance of football and regulation and the like. So, still very much doing the same things. My role, as you say, is to look after the community-owned clubs, of which we have we're into the late 30s now, 36, 37, something like that, around the country, 2 in the EFL, the remainder in non-league. So that's about developing new clubs as well into the network, but also looking after those clubs that we have existingly.
Yeah, with that, Richard, when you say look after them, what do you mean by that?
So at the support that we provide is basically everything that a club could need, and that is so we provide the model rules for those community-owned clubs, and those are registered by Financial Conduct Authority, the FCA, and as a result, we oversee the adherence to those rules. So that's everything from numbers of board members to elections and to all of those sorts of things, to how they deal with assets. And then we have external consultants that we can put them in touch with if they've got legal problems, if they've got fundraising issues, And sort of property development issues, so around development of ground and those sorts of things. So we are the sort of so we are the de facto regulator, if you like, to make sure that they're adhering to those model rules and doing all the things that they should do, getting their accounts into the FCA on an annual basis, conducting proper elections, having AGMs, all of those sorts of things, but also the support organisation as well to. Make sure that they are able and functioning as well as they possibly can.
Okay, and so if any clubs aren't doing that, you're able to what?
Yeah, we step in and help. I mean, I regularly turn up at clubs' AGMs. I travel around the country. There's myself and Andy Walsh, who some of your listeners will probably have heard of, as he was the one of the founding members of FC United in Manchester. He joined the FSA a number of years ago. Now he and I work on community ownership, and so yeah, we travel around visiting clubs, making sure everybody's okay, and trying to solve problems. And it's about trying to establish the network, develop the network, so that it's not only us doing that, but our member clubs are helping other clubs. Because it's, we have a sort of quarterly network meeting, and at that, everybody sort of shares problems. We have a sort of couple of hours together where we talk through the activities in the network and those sorts of things, but also share problems, because it's pretty likely that if one of those clubs has come across a difficulty, one of the other clubs will have seen something very, very similar before. And it's a really, really sort of useful networking tool. So my role is to really bring all of those people together, and when they come to me, know that somebody else might have encountered that difficulty before.
In terms of how would a club become fan owned? I mean, is it kind of like the chicken or the egg sort of situation in terms of does a fan group need to approach you to kind of say, well, look, we're interested in maybe getting involved with our club in terms of making it more representative, or whatever way they want to word it, or is it clubs have approached yourselves and said,
It's
"Is
a
that
real
what you?"
variety of different ways that things have come about, and it's evolving. When we first started out with the very first fan-owned club, and I think you mentioned earlier that you'd spoken to guys at Enfield Town, so well over 20 years ago now that they were established. They were coming out of crisis, basically, sale of the ground. Then we had people like AFC Wimbledon, obviously the FA stitch up, etc. FC United, who came about as a protest against the Glazer ownership of the club. So it was that was the sort of very, very early stages. A lot of clubs going into administration: Exeter City, then Chesterfield, who then went back into private ownership, or ownership by their community trust at a latter stage. So yeah, different evolving ways that the community-owned clubs were coming about. What we're finding now is, and this is happening more and more, and we've just registered one today, is that clubs are coming to us because they see it as a strategic decision to do so, and that it's the community ownership, and that's what we call it, as opposed to fan ownership and supporter ownership, and that's what we tend to use more often, because that is what we believe it to be. And it's about developing the football club's role within their community. So a group of fans coming together, so yes, it is fan ownership, supporter ownership, but as part of their community to develop the club under this model. So we're seeing a really nice sea change. Clubs aren't we are dealing with Nuneaton at the moment. We've been talking to Rochdale. Those situations have moved on. We're talking to Torquay United, for example. In the past, recent past, we've been talking with Southend United. So there are still people coming to us in crisis situations, but it's quite refreshing for people to come and me to go to meetings, and people say, this is something that we want to do because we think this will work for us.
And not we're winding up in 2 weeks, save us
Well,
type situation.
exactly. We've had some nice little success stories. You probably know that East Thurrock United went into administration in September. We've now set up a community-owned club there, called East Thurrock Community. They're going to start back down in Step 7 or 8, in the Essex Leagues, in August, but they've already got 150 members and
Oh, good.
a bunch of people that used to volunteer at the club previously. involved in the club. So it's really amazing when you get to a meeting such as that one that I went to in December, and you've got sort of 80 or 90 people turn up wanting to hear what you've got to say, and instantly come up with their membership fee and set the club off on its way. So it's quite a rewarding experience. So when you see clubs go to the wall, it's obviously pretty depressing. But when you see
Yeah.
something like that, it's totally different.
Phoenix from the ashes, as it were.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. Well, going on to that kind of the models of fan ownership. Now, I'm diehard Hastings fan who's still upset that your Lewis pinched. They actually didn't pinch. You took 6 points from us this season.
Played very well at Pilot Field, I thought, actually. Surprisingly well for us, because we've not been very good, but there we are.
We did present some gifts, but maybe we talk about it another time. There was a few gifts given, but like from a because we've had our troubles before. Previous ownership, there was lots of should we say a few angry meetings that where people said the word fan ownership without really knowing what that really entails. It's as a concept, everyone thinks, oh yeah, fan ownership, but say for instance, like obviously there's Lewis, there's Enfield. Could you give us a couple of examples of kind of clubs that around that kind of level that and the kind of setup of their kind of fan ownership, if it were?
So there's two different ways that you can do it, if you like. They are basically, they're incredibly similar. Just going back though to what you say about fan ownership, and there's a lot of sort of misnomers around it. What we call fan ownership is an entity owned by fans that secures 50% plus one vote, basically. So think of the German model and the way that the Verein holds the football club in Germany. This is exactly the same thing. The
Okay.
majority of our clubs are 100% fan owned. So that is either via a supporters trust or which is the model rules that we have in place. But we also have model rules for a straight club as well. So it's two subtle different, there's slight subtle differences around it. The supporters trust would wholly own the limited company that operates the football club. Some of the misnomers around it, I think, come from historic misunderstanding of what this is about. To the point, the real extreme point where quite a lot of clubs have directors that say, well, we're fans, so therefore we're fan owned. Rochdale is a good example. Recently, there's 600 different fans that actually hold the shares in the football club, but they don't. There's not a, you know, there's still a controlling interest by another director. So again, there is a degree of fan ownership, but not what we would consider to be fan ownership in those instances. And the real crux of the matter is democracy. It is one member, one vote. So any organisation that purports to be fan-owned that doesn't operate in that way simply is not. Again, this is our our model that we're talking about. So our definition of fan ownership, and as we say, others may have a different view of it. As far as good examples are concerned, I mean, we've got quite a number in the National League North, National League South. Down south, we've got Tunbridge Angels, for example, playing in National League South. They have operated the model now for quite some considerable time, reasonably successful, sort of floating around the playoff levels. Others at step four, so our level, sort of people like Hendon as well, Lewis, obviously, as you've mentioned, and some of the more sort of higher profile ones in the north of England, like Scarborough Athletic, Darlington, Chester. And the like as well, all operating to this model. That's not to say that everybody is adhering to it absolutely bang on. And we do have to take some of the ways that some of the clubs operate with a pinch of salt. Not everybody is perfect. I will put my own club in that, and I'm sure you know about the donations that have been made to the club over the last 10 or 12 years. But ultimately, and you mentioned it at the top of the program, and that was our real remit is to try and make football clubs sustainable. And we believe this is the most sustainable model. It gets us away from the boom and bust that you guys have seen, that other so many other clubs have seen at all levels of football, where a private owner comes in, runs out of money because nobody makes any money at football, as we know, except a very, very few exceptions at the very, very top of the game. And you know, the boom and bust cycle just continues on from there. So it it's about, and yeah, you know, this is backed up now, hopefully, by an independent regulator. As far as the sort of five tiers of England English football is concerned, and we hope further down into it as well. And we hope that that, alongside the work that we do, and you know, a bit more good sense being applied, sustainability is the sort of way forward for everybody.
Okay, yeah. So just on the points you made. So when you say that a football trust would have, say, 50% control, or 50+1, and then a private owner, whoever, another person would have the other 49%.
I mean, could have, yeah. I mean, that's the absolute bare minimum. Yeah,
that's the bare minimum. Okay.
Yeah. Just... yeah. So the majority of our clubs are either 100% or a lot larger than 50%. I mean, the probably the one club that's got an ownership of around about 55% of the shares is Hereford, but the majority are much, much more, sort of 75 to 100% owned by the supporters trust, or by, you know, by the model, as I say, the club model that is 100%.
Okay, and just because this is, I know in the bar after a game, like when I've spoken to people about this, they'll just throw questions at me like, well, yeah, but what do we need to get a player in or something? I mean, say at Lewis, what if you can talk about that? That's fine if you can't, but like, you know, if there is a, say, like a need for you've got an injury crisis, you've got to get someone in, you know, a playing matter kind of on that thing. How does it, obviously, like we talk democracy, but like sometimes decisions need to be made fairly quickly. Yeah. How does that work?
So as far as there are a group of subcommittees that you would have, let's keep it more general, across our clubs, you wouldn't go as far as, so the democracy line is really for the big decisions, you know, moving ground and all of these sorts of things, and obviously elections, you know, electing a board and these sorts of things. What you do as a board once you are elected is you set up a number of subcommittees. There would be people within the club that would operate on the football management side that would make those decisions. They would be given a budget, and if you are you know, working to a sustainable model, which we hope everybody is, you know, everything, you know, comes in exactly the same way. There's very few differences. It's only in as much as the democracy element, we believe, avoids the stupid decisions being made, because in the past, and you know that many, many owners have their football clubs as sort of vanity projects. You know as well as I do that if they want to gain promotion, throwing money at it is the best way to do that, or that is the perceived best route to it.
Yeah.
The plurality of ownership should temper that, should actually stop that happening, so that you do actually make sure that you run in a sustainable fashion. Yeah, and that's why we advocate the idea. You know, it does
checks
not exclude sponsors, it doesn't exclude donations, but what you don't get in return, which many, many people that want to own football clubs do want, is control. You do not get that control. So if somebody's a willing benefactor and wants to put money into the football club, then that is fine, and we would guard against it, because if it's, you know, too large a sums, because obviously the sustainability would come into it. But if it's regular and the like, and what you need is obviously a number of those to keep it, to keep everything going in the same way as any other football club.
Yeah.
You know, it operates in a very, very similar way, but with that democratic fan involvement piece in the background that makes sure it should stay on track, basically.
Yes, I mean, because I can already hear a few fans in my ears. Well, you know, democracy, but just decisions that mean nothing at the end of a season. But what you're saying is, because you're obviously your regulators, the big decisions. So you're talking about budgetary decisions, big, as you say, ground moves.
Yeah.
I mean, is there any other examples of the kind of big decisions that a football club can?
I mean, I guess one of the major ones is if somebody comes in, as they have done at various of our clubs, to take it back into private ownership. There's a fairly high bar that you've got to get over, sort of 75% of members voting in a vote to go back into private ownership. Newport County have done it recently. So those are the sorts of things. I mean, some clubs put a lot of things out to their members to vote on sort of, you know, the new kit and those sorts of things, and whether they would be involved in certain tournaments, or, you know, whether they, you know, all of those sorts of things. You can go down to a slightly more minutiae level, but
is there a minimum, Richard? Is what I'm sure probably what I'm trying to get at.
There isn't. There's nothing stipulated. No, I mean, there are within the rules. Obviously, if you want to dissolve and go into private ownership, that is catered for. There's an asset locks if you want to do something. If you own your ground and want to do something with that, i.e., sell it, that's covered as well. So those are the big ticket items, I guess, within it. And it, you know, there is that level of protection, basically.
Yeah. Well, I suppose moving on from this, we're going to talk a little bit about football governance. Now, I mentioned before we started recording this that, you know, that I've heard many a story, and I'm sure you have as well, of clubs going overboard to a ridiculous extent. I mean, I know a story from a season or two ago where I heard from a very, very good source, one club, particularly in the Isthmian Prem, that was top. Chairman told them, we cannot be top. We need to get rid of everyone. We've got no money. We cannot go up. And which was like, okay, this was like 2 months into a season. You know, that kind of helter-skelter, like sort of half-decent, like actual budgeting. Like, you know, if you haven't got it, you haven't got it. You know, that sort of craziness. I mean, is there anything that the FSA is doing or can do or is already doing to kind of keep a little bit of a temper on some of these clubs, because it can really, you know we've got, I already know that there's a few clubs even this season that are paying ridiculous money for people, and but maybe we don't go too specific, but
I know exactly the club you're thinking of from 2 years ago, because it's quite shocking, sort of, and to be honest, you know, we talk to people that say exactly the same. It's actually too expensive to get promoted, that sort of thing. As far as what we're doing, bringing in the independent regulator at the top levels of the game is a start. Obviously, that is going to lead to a lot more of a level playing field as far as the professional game is concerned. We were disappointed that from our perspective in community ownership at the FSA, we were disappointed that it's not coming down below the National League itself, and not even as far as National League North and South, because we believe it needs it, for exactly the reasons that you set out. The last thing that we need is clubs overspending to the point where they're jeopardising their futures, because ultimately, you know, they're all community assets. Every single one of our clubs is a community asset, and we want to keep all of them going, basically. So we will need some backup. There is only so much we can do. We obviously encourage our non-league community owned clubs to be as sustainable as they possibly can be, and I think, you know, we've got a very good record as far as that is concerned, in that only one of our community clubs has ever gone into administration, and that was Stockport back in the early 2000s. So, you know, we are, it's not to say that some aren't, you know, living a little bit on the precipice, because that's football. That is the way football is, unfortunately. But, you know, the message that we're trying to get across is that more financial prudence is required to guarantee that longevity of clubs, because the last thing we want to see is clubs disappearing. You know, thankfully, it seems to have slowed a little bit, but there are you know, plenty that are teetering on the edge, as I'm sure you know. It's very, very sad. And you can see it, you know, you can go, even in our division, you go to some clubs that clearly have not got the support that they require to be in that division. And some of those have been at higher levels. It's quite surprising to see how few people are involved. And this is another thing as far as community ownership is concerned. For it to be a success, and, you know, you mentioned earlier on about, you know, what do we need to do to go into community ownership? Well, the answer to that is you need willing volunteers, and lots of them. People that, you know, not just a bunch of driving people, sort of four or five people driving things from the start, but people way into the future that will take this on, which is why, you know, when I go to an open meeting, if there's, particularly for a club, say, at our level, I mean, Isthmian Premier, if 20 people turn up, then I'm inclined to say, well, this isn't going to work for you. You need more people. Maybe you are best served as privately owned for the moment because you need to get more people involved before we can consider this sort of a model, because that's exactly what it's about. It's about having the club in perpetuity in the community ownership model and keeping it sustainable, you know, for the long term, not even the medium term.
It's going to maybe go on to health of the football pyramid in general. I mean, what's your thoughts? We're both of us, for what you said about, not particularly interested in the Premiership, but it's good that a lot of these clubs are getting pulled up now about, you know, with their governance, and that's trickling down to the Championship. I mean, what do you feel? Do you feel this is too little, too late? Do you feel that, you know, it's kind of shutting the barn door after the horse has bolted type situation? What do you think, Richard?
There's an element of that. I think there's a lot of work to do at the top end of the game. I mean, Premier League is kind of, because of the ridiculous amount of money's being paid on broadcasting, it ought to be sustainable. If you can't sustain a football club with that amount of money coming in, well, you know, I don't know why you would be in it. The Championship, I think, is, and I often use the term, the Wild West. It's a financial Wild West. It's that trying to get into the Premier League is just the be all and end all. And as a result, we've got examples of clubs. I mean, I don't know what the figures are, I haven't seen them recently, but when you've got clubs spending 175% of their turnover on wages, you know, that's not sustainable at any level with anybody. I think there is a robustness to the pyramid. Many, many of the clubs that do go to the wall come back, either as Phoenix clubs or are just, you know, reinvented in some way or other. And that, I think, shows the strength of feeling around the clubs and the amount of people that are happy to get involved at them. And I think that despite what might be done to them by rogue owners and the like, there's still, and this plays into our hands a little bit, there are still lots and lots of people who want to get involved and go and watch their football club. So I think there's definitely that robustness to the pyramid. I think it functions quite well. I think there are worrying trends down towards the lower ends where, you know, payments are being made to players, which I don't think, again, is sustainable when you get down to sort of step five, step six, that sort of a level. I think, you know, that starts to concern me, certainly. That's certainly a bugbear of mine. I think it's there's a real resilience, but we can't be complacent. I think there's only another crisis club around the corner. And I'm sure we'll see, and we'll be busy over the summer with a few that have overextended themselves and, you know, are wondering whether they can carry on next season.
Thanks for that, Richard. But Richard, I've got you on. I've got to ask you. Right. Hornchurch, obviously, they're going up, aren't they? There's no doubt about that. Who's making the playoffs and who's winning it?
Who's making the playoffs? So I'm amazed that Billericay have fallen away because they are the best. I think they're the best side I've seen this season. And how they've managed to sort of drop away, I don't know. I would love to see Enfield Town go up. I'd be very concerned, as everybody would be, for any of our clubs coming out of our division, because I think National League South is a very competitive division and also is very expensive. Enfield would need to see a few more people coming through the door, that sort of thing, a bit more sponsorship and all of those sorts of things as well. But I would really love them to get promoted, and we're not going to make it. So what do you think of your chances?
After that defeat against Horsham, who is I felt it was done a few weeks ago, but I'm not allowed to say that too loudly around my own fans, because they
they'll hang you on 40, won't they?
They beat me with sticks. I'd say I'd like to see Enfield go up. Some good guys there at Enfield. I know, obviously, quite a few of them there. And
we're playing Horsham tonight, so we won at their place again quite easily the other week, which surprised everybody. But we fully expect them to do a job on us this evening and probably end our hopes, I would think. But I think they've got a decent chance. I don't know what they were like when you played them, but I would have thought they've got a decent chance of getting promotion as well.
I hope so. But are you going tonight, by the way?
I am indeed.
Enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, listen, Richard, absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
No problem. And if ever anybody wants to talk about community ownership, if there's anybody at Hastings United or any other club in Sussex that ever wants to talk about it, we're a phone call or an email away, and we're happy to come and talk about what we do at relatively short notice. If there's enough people interested, we'll come along and do that. So yeah.
Yeah, no, I'll definitely raise it. I'll raise it with fan base, and you know, we could try and organise something. Details anyway, but
Course.
no, thank you, Richard. Take care
No
and
problem.
see you at the game, sir. Take care,
Indeed.
Richard. Thanks for your
Look
time.
forward to it. Thanks for
Cheers,
having
mate.
me.
Cheers, mate.
Ooh, well, I gotta get hold of the record machine when it comes to rocking. She's the queen. We'll have to dance on a Saturday night. A hold a loom where I can hold her tight, but she lives on the 20th floor of town. The elevators are broken down, so I walk 1, 2, 5, 3, 5, 4. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 more. Up on the 12th, I'm suddenly dragged. 15th to 4, I'm ready to slide. Get to the top, I'm too tired to run. Well, she called me up on the telephone. Said, come on over, honey, I'm all alone. I said, baby, you're mighty sweet, but I'm in bed with aching feet. This went on for a couple of days, but I couldn't stay away. So I walked 1, 2, 5, 3, 5, 4. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 more. Up on the 12th, I'm starting to drag. 15th to 4, I'm ready to sag. Get to the top, I'm too tired to run. Well, they sent to Chicago for repairs. Till it's a fixed, I'm using the stairs. Hope for her, of course, it's late. I love my baby too much to wait. All this climbing is getting me down. I find my corpse draped over a rail, but I climb 1, 2, 5, 3, 5, 4. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 more. Up on the 12th, I'm starting to drag. 15th to 4, I'm ready to sag. Get to the top, I'm too tired to rock.
And now we're off to the SBTS Isthmian and Prem fan roundtable. Many thanks to John, Terry, Mark, Ben, Gabriel, Harvey, Aaron, and Rob for making it happen. Right, it gives me great pleasure to introduce episode 120 of the Sussex by the Sea podcast, and we have got the Isthmian and Prem fan roundtable with lots of lovely people. We've got Gabs on as well now. Gabs, and
hey,
his
Gabs.
Hair is looking magnificent.
Hello.
I must say, what a coiffed haircut there. Hello, everyone. Hello, Terry, Aaron, Gabs, Harvey, and John from Margate, hashtag Enfield, Lewis, and Canvey, respectively. How the devil are you all?
Pretty well, mate.
You're pretty happy.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah, not, yeah. We'll get to you, Harvey. Don't worry. It's not that bad, mate. It's not that bad. Well, it's been, again, it's getting to that business end of the season now. And so, all the results, it's exciting stuff, either for the right reasons or the wrong reasons. Margate have won a game, so I think I'm going straight to Terry this week. Terry, talk to me about the last couple of weeks. I know you've had a lot of players come in.
Yeah.
I want you to sort of kind of fill us in on that one. And obviously a great result as well, right down at the bottom there. So please talk to us about that.
Okay, well, first one was with Gabs and that. We brought our new striker in, and he lasted 5 minutes before he got sent off.
So new striker was named
Destiny's his first name.
Say yes, Destiny. Yes.
Destiny.
Yeah,
that's him. Yeah,
it was his destiny to be sent off. So yeah, and was it a
literally.
Straight, a proper straight red, or
no? It was two yellows, within 5 minutes.
Is that because that Enfield lot were all diving on the floor like they usually like to?
Well, the second one, I'm saying the second one, he dived onto his leg. So, yeah.
It was a pretty it was a pretty quick on and off, put it that way.
Yeah.
He didn't fancy it? The weather was a bit inclement. He thought he'd early bath.
Weather was lovely.
Yeah.
It started raining after he got sent off.
Yeah, absolutely hammered it down.
So go on, but, Terry.
Getting the draw with Gabs's lot, I think it gave the boys a bit of a lift, you know. On the Friday, we lost our Andy, our supporters club chairman, he passed away, and all the lads are like really good friends with him, and he was a big figure in the club. So I think they sort of like, they were like, right, we're gonna do this for Andy, sort of thing. Pulled out the draw, and then
had Andy been ill, or is this just, was this sudden?
Yeah, yeah, it's cancer, but we weren't expecting him to go quite so quick.
No, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, he was hoping to get to the Enfield game. He organised himself a scooter and everything to come up to the game, but I mean, I don't know obviously exactly what happened, but yeah, it was quicker than we thought. So obviously the players were like fired up to get something for him. And then last night they had a t-shirt. I printed up a t-shirt with his picture on it, and they it was like, this is for Andy. That's why there's there was a picture with the whole team and all of us after the game yesterday. Yeah. Honestly.
And you couldn't drink?
No, I can't drink because I was driving the poxy minibus. So.
So tell us about the game then. Come on, so tell us about this win.
Honestly, I didn't think the game was going to go ahead. Apparently, the ref wasn't even going to look at the pitch, because I think with this being the fifth attempt, we really needed to get the game on for both teams. I mean, we started with Steve Cawley on and Destiny on the bench. It was fairly even, to be fair. Lots of chances either end. Absolutely drowned, though. Honestly, the puddle round by the penalty spot on the first half, I thought their keeper was going to have to like dinghy himself out. Like, you know, it was absolutely torrential. Yeah. I had my fingers were still crinkly when I got home. You know, when you've been in the bath too long. Yeah. My fingers were literally crinkly. So, yeah, I mean, first half, both fairly even. Officials were fairly good. They had one chalked off. We had one, like a couple of dodgy decisions. So the lino down that end was like, yeah, I'm not sure about him. And,
talk to me about bloody refs.
No, honestly.
We've got Ben Bennett here as well. Well done, Ben.
The linesman was the issue. Yeah, they had one chalked off. So it was like, oh, God, here we go. Like, you know, second half. Destiny comes on.
Did he stay on the pitch any time?
Eh?
Did he stay on the pitch for a while?
Yeah, because he scored.
Oh,
he was
the one
that got our goal. Yeah, a bit of a fumble around the goal mouth, but he managed to get it in the net. So,
I said it all counts.
Yeah. I'll say scrappy goals will take them.
Yeah.
I mean, Ben missed a few sitters, but like, honestly, the conditions were absolutely atrocious. My uncle's going to be at, we've got a white kit. Who decided a white kit?
Yeah.
Absolutely hopes. But it was just, honestly, my voice is going, and that's the first time in how many years I've been screaming behind the goal, and my voice has actually been affected because I was that mental on it, you know?
Well, you never know. I know you kind of thought it was gone, and I think we all sort of thought that, but I mean, a massive win. I mean, 7 points.
Seven points behind it. I mean, if they crash and we can keep the momentum going, who knows what's going to happen?
Could be destiny, couldn't it? It could be destiny.
Exactly. That's going to be so many headlines. So many headlines.
What's the gap now, Terry? Is it 6 points?
I think we need seven, and they if we can get seven and they capitulate, then we might be all right. So that's what I'm hoping for. But like, you know, we just need the lads to, we've literally got to win every game. It's not going to happen, but like that's what the lads have sort of like set themselves out for now. They're like, they're really buzzing for it now. Yeah, it's honestly
I mean, it's an absolute massive win. I mean, I'm not sure who I don't know who Chesson have got next. A quick look.
They've got Bognor, I believe.
Oh, Bognor. Yeah, they've been fairly piss poor recently, aren't they? Or am I getting that completely wrong?
They drew last night, I'm pretty sure.
It was with Wingate, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
Yeah, because we've got Potter's Bar on Saturday, so we'll see how it goes. But as you can imagine, I'm slightly euphoric.
Yeah, I can imagine. I know about that feeling, euphoria, followed by that, unfortunately for me as a Hastings fan, followed by something else. But
had so many weeks of it being absolute dogs. It's just, I'm sorry, Gabs, but like, you know, picking up that point with you guys. And it was very nice to meet you in a bar, by the way.
Likewise. Yeah.
You've got to tell him about the spoons.
Yes, I will.
Would you know about the spoons? Wait, hang on. What's this about the spoons? You've got to tell me now, Gabs. Come on, let's go straight to you then, Gab. Right, so
go for it, Gabs.
So, Enfield, talk to me. You're still up there. Yeah, it looks like you're going to make it. this season, and yeah, I mean, talk to me about it.
I can't ever say it until we do, mate. You know what I mean? We're there, and then we dip, and then we, you know, and then I'm despondent, and then we're euphoric, and then it's, you know, we're never given much of a rest as Enfield Town fans. Not least when we took the lead after what 25, 30 minutes against 10 men, and you know, and yet everyone isn't thinking, oh, hooray, you know, we're kind of home and hosed. Everyone's thinking, well, hang on a sec, they've got 10 men and actually they're playing the better football. So you kind of knew something was on the cards. And you can't begrudge Margate. They missed two absolute sitters from where we were. Like, there was like a square ball from about 6 yards out and their fellas put it wide. You know,
that's how our luck has been running.
Our keeper Reese has had to pull out a camera save basically to keep us in it at one point. And just a weird game, because at the same time it's not as if we were kind of Margate definitely had their chances, but also we just could not hit the proverbial cow's backside. Honestly, it was however we tried, it was like, you know, either it was offside, we had the ball in the net, or we, you know, just, I think at one point our own striker blocked an oncoming shot. It was that kind of game. But I mean, obviously, you know, when you go to Margate, you're having to try and compete with Terry. And to be fair, we brought a decent contingent on us. But this time around, I didn't bring the drum with me. I'd given it to a mate. And it was only kind of travelling to the ground when he realised. In fact, I think he'd actually got to Kent by the time he realised, oh, like, damn, I don't have sticks with me. So he's had to go round the corner into the local Tesco and pick up a set of wooden spoons. and to be fair, if you're playing them with the flat end, they're actually okay. They're actually not too bad. The only reason they didn't see as much action in the second half is because we were dreadful. But, you know, it was, a bit of improvised thinking. Shout out to my mate Ben for doing that.
Well done, him. Yeah, so, and then you had a game called off, didn't you, Gabs?
Yeah, not for the first time at Whitehawk. I mean, it's at least this time they had the courtesy to announce that they were doing a pitch inspection rather than wait on the Friday night and the Saturday morning and then wait for us to get on the train until about, I think, 2:05 was when they called it off the last time. So,
yeah,
you know, they did a little bit better than last time, at least.
Well, funny enough, Mark's on. Mark from Whitehawk's on, so we can get a little bit of a Whitehawk response. Hello, Mark.
How are you doing? Sorry, I'm out and about, but how are you?
Yeah, not bad, sir. So talk to me about Whitehawk. There's been a few goals going in.
Yeah, just not in the right end. Yeah. On Saturday. It's Hornchurch, so I don't really know what we really expected. I mean, personally, we looked at it as a free hit for the Saturday. We went 8 unbeaten before that. Mm. Was on a good little run. We went 3-0 down, I think, in about 20 minutes. I think at Hornchurch, we conceded in about 30 seconds from a corner. Oh. It was horrendous. And then we sort of knew where that was going from that day. After that first goal, Hornchurch are just different level, really, I think, in my opinion, to the rest of the league.
Yeah.
I think the calibre of players that they've got compared to what we got as Whitehawk, different level. But yeah, it was interesting. I think it was definitely one of those games where we look at it and go, on to the next one, you know.
I've been there with that, mate, don't worry.
Yeah, so I think it was disappointing that the game went on yesterday. But rightly so. I mean, the weather was terrible down here today. So we could. By 2:00, there was actually no chance the game was being played. Literally no chance. But, I mean, I think from a Whitehawk perspective, I think that we've just got to see the season through now. I still think we can upset a couple results-wise, which we're always likely to do anyway. But I think we just need the season finished now. And then focus again on rebuilding. We've had a lot of injuries. We've actually got a international on our team away at the moment. So,
we always used to have Norrie Scott, who used to play for Bermuda, right? And that was our only international. But he's at Lancing now. So you've got eight.
Look. So we've had So we had Luke Robinson last season. Oh, I couldn't, to be honest, I couldn't remember the name of the country he played for, if I'm being brutally honest with you. But Imran's at Pakistan.
So all right.
In Pakistan at the moment, which is really good.
Was he the lad that got you the hat trick?
He got the hat trick against.
And now he's on.
Up in Toten the other week, a couple of weeks ago, against Kingstonian. Yeah, he got the hat trick. So he's a very good winger, really, really good. But with him away, that don't help. We've got so many injuries at the moment. It's absolutely horrendous. We're literally playing under 18s in the squad to see us through. So. Yeah, it's a bit of a battle really at the minute with us. I think we, on paper, you know, the squad that we've got, if we've got the players available, fit and ready to actually play, I've never not fancied us against any team in the league except Hornchurch on our given day.
Unless you're Hastings, mate. Unless you're Hastings. Yes. We'll get to that. I'm we'll not, be Ben.
We can have a day off. I'm not doing it. But no, I mean, I always believe, same as everyone here, you know, Margate, Enfield, any team. I personally believe that we can beat any team in this division on our given day. And we can do. If we've got the full squad, we can do it. But we are so, so depleted at the moment. It's actually horrendous. But yeah. Wild being wild, we'll always give a fight and we'll always battle every week. And we've got home game this Saturday. And then there's a big number of us going home to Lewis on Monday. So can't wait for that. That'd be a good one,
wouldn't it? Just hopefully get half decent
just
weather.
To get tone over 5-0. So it'd be lovely. Yeah, it'd be great.
there's no good time to play Hornchurch though, is there? So there was on a bit of a backlash after we played them.
That's true, yeah.
They've just got quality and strength all over the place, didn't they?
They only lost two now, aren't they? So it was obviously on a bit of a hiding after we played them, and then come firing out the blocks.
Yeah, so I think we played them off the back of their defeat, and then they just made us like mugs really for 90 minutes. The game was done in the first 20 minutes. They were 3-0 up in 20 minutes, and it was just like, well, embarrassing really. But again, like I've always say, on our given day, the Hawks will beat anyone. Interesting. We've got two or three away days, and we've got about eight at home left. And our home form is actually pretty good. So never say never. Never write the Hawks off. That's what I always say. Never write the Hawks off. No, ever.
We know that.
Ever.
Yeah. So do we.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I've noticed Rob's here. Hey, Rob, sorry, I didn't even say hello to you, Rob. Rob from Folkestone's back. He's been away a while. Are you all right, chap?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. You?
Yeah, not bad. You know me. Rob, let's talk to you. What's going on at Folkestone, mate?
Well, we moved up the place. We got a nosebleed now. We're 16th. So, yeah, we're moving up in the world, mate. It's nice to see because we were rooted at 17th for a long time. Couldn't sort of move off of there. Had a mixed bag of results. Went to Chesant, was it last Tuesday? And pretty poor, really. And we managed to get a result with the weekend, beat Cray 1-0, which I didn't really see coming, to be honest. But so we've moved up. Doesn't look like we're in any danger. Go on, off you go. And
they won in on everything,
not
mate.
Not too bad. I know, mate. You can't, honestly, I've put him to bed like five times. He just keeps coming down. He's like a boomerang with legs. but I think it's all about next season, just because everyone. You know, because Dover are coming down, and that is that is our game. That is the game for us. So that's a massive.
Not many.
Derby. We haven't played them. We haven't played them in a long time in the league. For them to be down there when they were playing like Luton in the National League and teams like that, all those National League teams, the next Football League teams. So
I'm sure you really won't remind them. I'm sure you won't remind them that they used to play those teams.
Oh, I don't talk to them, mate.
No. Well, it's off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So, who you got Saturday?
We have got. We're playing. I think playing Good Friday.
Good Friday. Sorry, I still moved.
Yeah, we got Lewis at home, and then obviously we're at Hastings on Easter Monday.
Yes. Yeah, So Lewis.
Yeah.
What do we think? You having a win there or what?
It's at home. Well, we haven't done very well against Lewis for a long time, so I can't. I think the best we can get is a draw out of that game. I don't think. Yeah, I can see a draw, possibly a draw. But I think
I won't ask you about the other one. That's 1 point out of two games. Yeah, 1 point.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. I don't fancy it there either, to be honest. It's just a wind down now to the end of the season, but we're lucky enough to be in that position, I think. I don't think there's any danger, even though we've got like our run into the end of the season is difficult. Like, we've got Horsham there, we've got Chatham away, we haven't been there yet. Dulwich, Hamlet at home, Bognor on the last day. Yeah, Gloucester, Hastings, Lewis, and there's one more, might be Concord.
That is difficult.
Concord.
No, it's difficult.
Yeah, it's a difficult run. It's difficult. So I think we should, you know, we should be okay. It would be a real collapse to knock back into the relegation now. I don't think it's so. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. All right, we just talked Lewis. Let's quickly go to Harvey. Harvey, sir. Hello. Lewis, what do we think? Are they still with a chance of playoffs?
Well, I'm cautiously optimistic because we're talking about run-ins. Of all the teams that are kind of still just about there, we've got one of the easier ones, I think. Like we've got Kingstonian, we've got Haringey. Folkestone is an easier game, I suppose. So I'm still cautiously optimistic that we can just about get there. But the way our
season heard you going, when you said Folkestone's an easier game, you laughed there.
You can
there.
Never tell, really.
Well, I love it. You did say White Oak in that as well. So
well, yeah, so that can go either way.
Yeah. So your last couple of games, anything about them? Did you manage to get to them? Any sort of match report on that?
Yeah, I've been to most of them. We've had very up and down kind of month. We had a good week last week. We beat Concord 2-1, which was our first like decent performance in a while, I think.
Mm.
Because we've had our main issue, I think, has been with the attacking. Like we haven't really had a proper good striker for most of the season, and we played Chris Whelpdale. He's normally plays midfield, but he played up front. He plays up front so every so often, and he was good Saturday. So hopefully we kind of carry on with him up front for the last few games.
He's
but
not
apart from Concord. It's not been a great
Harvey,
month really.
Harvey, he weren't that bloke that was playing up front for you when you beat us. Who is that?
No,
old
no, that's a different
up
guy.
Front. I bet he ain't even in your team now, is he? You put some 36
no, he's not.
Year old.
Kieran's
yeah,
not
I thought so. Yeah, I mean,
Hastings. What's happened to
He's not seen the starting 11.
Yes. Go on, what you say?
Your guess is as good as mine, mate. He's kind of fallen off.
So go on, Gab. You were just asking a question.
I'd just ask because Tommy Wood was in that Lewis team start of the season, and as many people tend to do, he had an absolutely blinding game against Enfield. But just of late, it seems like he's kind of drifted away.
Yeah, it has been. He's not had a great few months, really. He was good up around Christmas. He was quite good, but since then, he's not really been at it. He's got like two or three goals since January, and we've kind of had to look for replacements since then. We signed, I think he was at Haringey previously. His name's Walter Figuera, who I think he can play up front as well. So it'll either be him or Whelpdale up front. Probably for the rest of the season. It's like, we've had some very dodgy results because we played Canvey Island at home a few weeks ago. And
what happened there?
We thought we'd won that because we scored in the 90th. We didn't play awfully, but I can't remember if we won up or down. But the point, we went 1-0 up, played well for most of the game. And then Sam Higgins came on, who seems to be our bogey player, and scored in quite late on. And we thought, we fucked it. But, excuse my language.
That's fine, don't worry
about
it.
That's all right, you had first.
Don't fucking worry about it, go on. It's my podcast, don't worry about it, mate. Go on.
So they scored late on, and then we went right up the other from a corner, and we thought, brilliant, we've rescued it. But then Higgins somehow scored again, so it ended up being 2-2, which was a disappointing game. It kind of sums up our season, I think. We don't really hold them to leads very well a lot of time.
All right. Thanks for that. Thanks for that, RV. Well, we're talking about Canvey. Let's move on to John from Canvey in what has been a bit of a tumultuous season, a bit of emotional season for you, John. I remember that one of the tweets you put out. Obviously, there's been a lot going on around the club. I thought you had that game won. I genuinely thought you'd beat Aaron's hashtag and.
I'm glad you had
equalised. Sorry about that. But yeah, please talk to me.
I'll go into a couple of those issues. I was touching on that. I'll try to think where did we last pick up. I think obviously, the next game we had after we last spoke was, I think we had Horsham. Obviously, I think we're just got off the back of a sort of pretty awful game at Folkestone. Probably up there as contender, one of the worst games football I've ever seen. I think I put in our programme that the board got more air miles than the Rolling Stones on tour, mate. That board got heavy on points on it now because it was just hanging in the air for most of the day. So yeah, I mean, it was pretty uninspired there, really, and ended up losing as a result. The away detriment goes on. Still ain't won since we've come to your place, Chris, so on the road. So it's been a while. Had Horsham at home, and we seem to carry on the same sort of trend first half, just give away a really stupid goal early on. And then, obviously, the player you touched upon earlier, that Daniel Akeji, is it?
Ashkai,
yeah. Yeah, to be fair, he's
a good player.
Yeah, he's been one of them who's troubled us any time we've played him. And, yeah, he got himself a good goal. Sort of went in 2-0 down, and all of a sudden, I think they remembered how to play football for a bit. We sort of come out 48 minutes on the clock, and we got a goal back. And for most of the rest of the game, we seemed like the better side. I mean, they had a chance or two. Our keeper pulled off a really good save, I think, kept us in it. Which, yeah, by that time, I think we'd left ourselves too much to do, really. Trying to force the issue, made them work a fair bit. But, you know, like, I suppose they're a team who's definitely battling for something at the moment, aren't they, in terms of playoffs? So they ground it out. But, you know, I think we're a bit less despondent about it than we were at the start of the game. Obviously, it was chalk and cheese in terms of the halves. Second half, far better. And we seem to take that into the weekend as well against Hashtag. Yeah, played probably the best half of football I've seen us play in a while. Went into a 2-goal lead. Yeah, was playing some really good stuff. Had him on the back burner. And then just, again, the same sort of thing that's cost us all season. Made a stupid error to give them a goal just before half-time. Pretty much, I think, slipped from midfield or something. And
yeah,
their boys just broke in, got the goal. And yeah, I think for most of the sort of second half, I think they got wind in their sails then. We had to do a fair bit of defending, which obviously we've got a bit of a patchwork defence at the moment. We've got a 17-year-old in from Swindon, so it's been a bit of baptism of fire for him in the last two games. You know, we seem to be playing all right. Had a couple more chances, could have had the chance to go 3-1 ahead, and then 86th minute, sack punch. Another player who seems to have a bit of sign over us, whatever team he's playing in, a fella called Alex Taniola. We were giving him a hell of a load of abuse on the sidelines, and he comes on and does that. So I could have called that. It's always the way. I literally turn around to a couple of the other boys into where we stand, this little place called the Shed.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, the more and more you give it to him, the more and more likely he's to score. And of course he does. So, yeah. So, I mean, it was a big gut, you know, that close.
I'm losing John. John,
that's that Cammy connection.
But John, we lost you there for a minute.
Put you paused in a really conspicuous position there. I was like, wait, what's going on?
Yeah,
but yeah, no, sorry, as I was saying, mate, it came off the back of a bit of a tumultuous week for us. Yeah. Pretty much straight after the Horsham game, our manager got called in, told the budget's getting slashed. Our owners are planning things around again, which ain't good. There's a long-running battle between sort of the supporters over there and the owners. There's not a lot of love. We haven't had fans for them in 7 years. That kind of shows what they think of us there. So that's annoyed the manager as well. He's had to let two of our players go. One of them was a bit of a fan favourite as well, a fella called Charlie Edwards. So yeah, it's not been the easiest week in that regard. I'll say the players certainly have the arse with them at the moment. I don't even think they bothered coming to the bar afterwards, stuck to himself. So they don't. It's a bit like sort of splitting the three camps at the moment. You kind of got the supporters on the side of the players, and the players on the side of the supporters, and then everyone just has the arsehole with the running of the club, which has never really been great in the time I've been there, to be honest. You know, despite what we've sort of done in the last 2 years going back into this league, a lot of that really has come off the back of the determination the squad's had. Not so much investment from the top. I mean, obviously, for a few years, you've probably been down to us. You see the arse about face, way they run things. Yeah. With, I mean, we never had a car machine till the start of this season on the clean gate. It's 2023. It was 2023 then, for Christ's sake. All the stupid stuff at the bar. Just seems to be this black hole that finances disappear into. I mean, this apparently came off the back of an unexpected bill with the lighting, because we'll probably have to play a few more Tuesday night games than we used to. But yeah, it's just excuses, really. Yeah. And I think it's put a sour taste in a lot of people's mouth. But ultimately now, I think the squads, we've got a sort of small squad. We're not going to be able to make any more reinforcements now. And in the time we've got to make transfers, I think it's only until the 28th now, isn't it? So that's tomorrow, actually, yeah, isn't it? So, yeah, we're kind of left with what we've got, a sort of small patchwork squad. But a lot of them players have spent a lot of time together. They've been there for about the last 4 years. A lot of them, there's about six or seven players in the squad, over 100 appearances for the club, which is saying, you know, this sort of day and age in value quite a lot. So yeah, they'll be up for the fight. I mean, I think I worked it out. We need about six more points just to make certain. I looked at, obviously, Marquette winning last night, and so I think, oh, for God's sake, don't let that gap narrow anymore. But, you know, we just need a win or two from somewhere. You know, we've got White Hawk on Saturday. Obviously, it's trying to beat that away curse. I'm sure the game's going to be on. It's the only ground in the league I haven't done yet. So I actually wanted to take it off. So hopefully the weather gods spare us. And then, yeah, we've got Allchurch on Monday, which could be a wonderful thing because they could get ground champions on our ground. So it ain't getting any easier, but we can upset the apple cart there.
It'll yeah, be, you could do.
You should never know. I mean, I'm always in the camp, mate. Like, you know, as far as sort of things go, you look at it on paper and you kind of wonder where the win's going to come from. But anytime we go into a game, I think, you know what, if we play like we know we can play, how the players have performed in the past, then we can still beat anyone in this league. It's just remembering how it seems like it's been so damn long.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel so long ago since obviously you played us, and, you know, I would never have expected this run from then on. It's crazy,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, like I say, I think it's just been a culmination of things building up, really, mate. Injuries, postponements, and now this with the budget as well. It's, it's going to be an interesting off-season when we get to it. There's going to be a lot of rebuilding, I think.
I think that goes for a few clubs, John. I think there's been a few that have maybe gone over and above.
It does, definitely. Yeah.
John, you know, you said about your owners and, you know, basically not giving a shit, in all seriousness. Two things, I'll have a beer with you on Saturday, not a problem. I'll buy you a beer. Second thing is, I just want to get like, we've had, as Whitehall fans, we've had a bit of a, we've all knocked heads recently and we've all spoke about, you know, the way the clubs run and, you know, the logistics of it all and stuff like that. I mean, for instance, when we played Lewis at home, Lewis dwarfed us. The amount they brought to the enclosed was ridiculous. It was just like crazy. And we was waiting half an hour for a pint. And, you know, like the logistics of the football club and all these little aspects of it. And for me, I don't know about all the rest of the clubs, but do you feel as well that you don't really get listened to by the owners of your clubs, like we don't get listened to? That's sort of my question to you lot.
Oh, 100%, mate. I mean, there's been so many people who have come, or at least tried to go to the board over the last few years, especially in the time I've been there. I mean, this is something that seems to have gone on for quite a while, ever since the sort of fallout of what we call the sort of post-Jeff King era. It's almost like AD and BC with that, really. So in that time, we've had a consortium of people who have owned the club. They're all people who used to, I think, sort of work or they went to school with Jeff, people long running sort of friends of his. And it used to be headed up by a fella called George Frost, who sadly recently passed away. But he ain't been involved with the club since about sort of 2016, really. But sort of since that time, any time really anyone's tried to go to the board with sort of fresh ideas, they just get knocked back. The people who run it there, they're all like in their sort of late 60s, early 70s. They're all very sort of set in their ways. And I think they try and model the club off of sort of a model of sustainability, really, which I can admire in some respects because we know, like, okay, we're going to have the lights on again. We're not going to go under like so many other clubs have had in the last few years, which is something to be grateful for. But at the same time, there seems to be no real drive amongst them to move forward, really. And as I say, we ain't a fans for 7 years. You know, some clubs have that buyer yearly, don't they? So it just seems like any time that anyone wants to bring an idea forward, not even to like criticise them really, just to say, look, I think we're doing this, et cetera, it doesn't happen. It just gets brushed under the carpet.
Just for transparency's sake, 7 years is unheard of.
You know, yeah.
I mean, we haven't had one for a while, but like, yeah, we get one every sort of 18 months or so at least, you know.
But how bad is that though? You got to think, people like me and all you guys that were on this chat, we follow our local football clubs, and if anything, we're the heartbeat of that football club that follows that team. And to not even be allowed to have some sort of input into the way the football club, even just having an opinion We found it with Wilk recently. You know, I spoke to the manager. The managers love him to death. Like, I wouldn't want anyone else in charge. But when you pull an opinion up on the way the club's run, it's nothing to do with me. And I say, well, I know it's nothing to do with you, but, you know, between having a fans, a fans consortium or fans, you know, a Q&A and between us and the club, it's not really that difficult to do. But, you know, a lot of you probably feel exactly the same as I do as a Wild supporter. You know, we feel like we should probably be battling higher than what we are. I mean, the people that own our football club own a company which is like a multi-million pound company. And we can't even get a fridge fixed in one of our sheds to house more people to buy beers and stuff like that on a day-to-day basis. So it's little things like that, and we go, but we can see the logistics of it going wrong, but just trying to have your opinion as a fan towards the football club sometimes doesn't get through, do you know what I mean? And I don't know if I'm the only one that feels that way as well. It just falls on deaf ears a lot of the time.
So I imagine ourselves as Enfield and Lewis in our kind of ownership models, I think we take that for granted a little bit, in that obviously we're intrinsically set up so that supporters are, you know, are by definition the owners. And so, you know, any kind of opportunity to deny them any kind of voice, let alone go 7 fucking years without a fan forum or an opportunity to engage directly with the ownership is nuts. That's ludicrous.
That's ridiculous. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Chris.
What, Ben?
Before November, before last, where we had the fans forum.
Don't talk to me about fans forums, mate. I'm wanting to murder people in our fans forum, mate.
Listen, when was the last time we had one before that?
Oh, God knows.
Previous ownership.
God knows. Yeah, we had the same problem.
Was that 7-8 years? That was the first one they did, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, that's only. It was
it's going to be different.
Only reason I bloody organised it. So,
well, they gate crashed, didn't they?
The owners gate crashed it, said that we were moving to Eastbourne, completely shit on me. Fucking half the people there hated me after that, didn't they? And thought I was in league with the owners. Do you remember that?
No,
Ben?
I didn't. No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. I heard you spreading rumours. I know what you're like. An argument with words and everyone. Right.
No, but in seriousness, though, that was the first one for about 7-8 years. That was the first one they'd done.
I don't remember enough. I don't remember one before. No, I don't remember it.
That was the only one that you would remember then.
No, I don't. Yeah. It's worth this because I could pass the number on to you. The bloke I spoke from the Football Supporters Association, who sorts out in terms of fan ownership, kind of fan involvement, he's willing to come to any of your clubs. So say Whitehall, Canvey, whatever, in terms of giving you kind of ideas about what you can do. But he also is kind of gauging if your fan base is serious, because, you know, one or two of us being bothered about it and isn't going to carry it, you know, like for whatever you want to do, you know, in terms of if you want to maybe help invest in the club or help create something a little bit bigger. Yeah. So I'll send whoever wants that. I'll send you his number after that.
Yeah, Richard, Richard?
Yeah, Irving. Richard. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. No, he's from experience. He's very, very. I mean, the whole FSA.
He's a Lewis fan, though. I mean, that's his only downfall. But yeah,
I won't meet him Monday then. You won't want to meet Monday.
Chris, obviously we're all ears as well, having been there, done it. So
yeah,
you know, we can lend a hand as well.
Oh no, go on. Sorry, Mark. Go on.
Yeah, no, sorry. No, I just think, like, from my point of view, I just wanted to gauge how much, you know, as a fan, you know, input into clubs that people have at this level, because I think it's vitally fucking important that us fans have input into our football clubs that we go and watch home and away every week. And for me, it's important that the clubs recognise us and use a lot of that, go and follow your respective clubs home and away as well. We're just not getting that lack of communication. Like I said, our owners are multimillionaires and they can't put a fucking fridge in the clubhouse to put more beers in to help more people or whatever. But yeah, no, it was just more to gauge, Chris, really, what you know, if a lot of other people, supporters, feel the same with the communication between their club as what I do, because it's fucking minimal, basically, very minimal.
I think it's most, you know, you've got your Enfields and you obviously your Lewis's, but most clubs are not the best. They just take their fans for granted most of the time.
Our chairman, Ricky Owen, he often, like, phones me or texts me if there's something that's come up, say, on social media. And he's like, well, what what can I do about that? Or he'll ring me and say, can you just let people know this? And, you know, he sort of uses me like a liaison sometimes. So we might not get everything done how we want it to, but at least Ricky, like, he'll get onto me and say, look, can you let people know we're trying to do this, but we can't do anything until we've actually got it signed, sealed and delivered, that sort of thing, like with the stadium being built and that. So we've got a little bit of communication there, not as much as we'd like, but, you know, at least we've got something. So
I don't think it's like a case of like us being too involved as supporters and saying, this is how you run a football club, this is what you've got to do.
Yeah.
It's also, for me personally, especially in February, on the Tuesday night games, we had Bognor and we had, I can't remember who else we had, because it feels like we play every team every week all the time anyway. But we was there for every Tuesday night game and there was 90 of us standing at the enclosed. And I just went, something's wrong here. There's nothing right here. I said, them boys are lining up on a Tuesday night in the rain and there's one man and his dog standing here. I said, it's embarrassing. So, but I mean, for me, it was just trying to get a gauge of if you have any input in logistics or, you know, the club come to you and go, oh, what's going wrong? What's going right? Because I think it's vitally important that actually, as our supporters, we do have a say in our football clubs because we're the ones that are there every week. So it is really important.
I would say, Mark, my personal opinion, because I've had this out with other fans, is do it yourself. Don't wait for someone to be coming along and doing it for you. Start up your supporters club. Do all this. Try and get things going off your own back. That's the best way. Because if you wait for everyone else, mate, you know.
I think you're right, mate. Yeah, and I think that's the road it's going down. Yeah. All right, yeah.
So I could just mention that we had a takeover of the club. I think it was towards the end of last season, and the owners of the club now, there's a few businesses involved. Like they run one lot runs pubs, the other lot is part of a haulage company, and the chairman Josh Healy, he's part of a building company, a local building company, you know, decent sized one. It's not like one man is built. And that since they come in, they've done a fans forum every month, and it's sort of all come from them. The guy, especially him, Josh, he's on the terrace, is all the away games and things like that, and he's just really approachable. I don't, you know, it's early doors because they've only been here a little while, but they do care, and I know because I've been told that they read the forums and take bits and pieces from that. It's, I think before, although I didn't really have a criticism of the people that are there before, they, you know, they kept the club alive, really. But it was a bit more like old boys, you know, tie and blazer type thing. And now it's a bit, they're, you know, sort of younger owners, you know, sort of in their 40s. And I think they're quite ambitious. I don't know 100% what their plans are. I think they'd like to push on. I don't know what would happen if, for example, we didn't get what they were looking for. Well, you know, I'm really, no complaints from them. They do listen to the supporters and, we'll credit them for that.
Good. Right.
We're in the same boat, really, Chris, aren't we?
Yeah, let's go to, well, let's talk about Hastings now for a minute, and then we're going to go to you, Aaron. Sorry, mate. I know you've been waiting a while. But Ben, yeah, go, I mean, touch on the fan ownership quickly, Ben, and then we'll talk about Hastings.
Well, ownership is just totally different to what it is now, though, isn't it? It's just a connection there. Obviously, they're born and bred Hastings. Everybody knows them, football people, they're there, home and away. Just totally different to what was there before. We obviously don't doubt that the previous owners put money into the club where it was needed. But regards to actual football and connection with having engagement with fellow supporters, other people around the club, it's the strength of it is just ridiculously different. And all for the better. And I imagine a fans forum won't be too far away from what I heard. So obviously needs to get all the main information in place first before it goes out there. It's just silly having half the detail in front of you. Might as well have it all. So that'll happen soon. But yeah, it's different. Obviously, knowing them myself personally, and
he's on the payroll. He's on the payroll. Don't worry.
Massively football people. Yeah, and it helps obviously because they're there every game as well. So
genuine people, approachable,
and they want to take any information, any problems that anybody's got on board, and literally it's an open window.
Yeah.
Totally different to what was there before.
I don't want to talk about the ones
before. Was that sarcasm, Chris, or was that genuine? I couldn't work that out.
They're genuine Hastings. Because obviously, like, Ben and Dean have been involved with the club for many, many years. Mark, you didn't know what the previous ownership was like. It's
bad. Again,
there was some shocking decisions that got. I don't want to go back to it. I don't even think about it. Wind me up.
But you're in a good place now, and that's all that matters.
Oh yeah, we're in a lot better place. Yeah, I mean, there's some big decisions coming up about our ground in terms of what's going to happen, and it's just about. I think a lot more people are on board because it isn't being done. Nothing's being done behind our backs anymore. It looks like that we're going to stay at the Pikeford, and there might have to be some changes with the main stand and things like that. But it's like they're going to kind of have that conversation with us when they can give us what kind of plans are an option.
We had a lot of that last summer, mate, with the stands and stuff, and it's all regulations and stuff when you go into certain leagues and whatever. And we was over there last summer digging out the stands, literally digging under the stands, concreting it, putting it back together, making sure it was all the regulations were spot on. And it takes time, but again, you know, clubs of our sizes, they're all fan efforts. That's what it comes down to.
Mostly, yes.
It comes down to everyone being around and help out. Yeah, and that's, you know, if you've got things to do for next season, you rally the troops up. That's all you got to do.
Well, let me go over to Ben there, because is it next season or is it this season? What do you think, Ben? Obviously, there's a few games you need to talk about. Because do you think our season's over? Or you still think we've got that chance of a glorious playoff spot?
Over? No, it's only just started, isn't it? No. Well, of course we have. Of course we've got a great chance, haven't we, really?
I think we've had
a really, really tough run of fixtures. Obviously played everyone around us or above us and beyond. We've obviously still got Enfield to play at home, which is tough. They're still around us. And we've got to go to Wingate. But the rest of them are very, very... Well, they're all winnable games. I mean, we beat Hornchurch. So if you can beat Hornchurch and go toe-to-toe with them, they've got the... right attitude to go and beat anybody. So
there's no bills paid for Femi. No bills paid, was there?
Yeah, he didn't pay any bills that week, did he?
No, fucking Femi. Anyway, go on.
Yep. So, but yeah, it's positive. It's a shame that we went from Hornchurch to first half at Horsham was just it was like watching a different side. It was straight. It took us to go 2-0 down to actually realise we was in a game. Second half.
Offside penalty. I'm not offside penalty. What a stupid thing to say. Two yards outside the box.
Yeah, but this is
referee conspiracy.
But this is the consistency. It's consistently crap. Putting it bluntly, it's rubbish. It's not like it happens now and again. It's consistent. I mean, pretty much 3 or 4 yards outside the box, and he gives a penalty. And you've got a linesman just on the other side as well, literally in line with the play. I just don't get it. They might have scored from the resulting free kick. Who knows? But I mean, that's a big decision. We was gaining a bit of momentum before that, and it's kind of a kick in the you know what, to be honest, when they get that. And then we gifted them a second goal. So we 2-0 down at Horsham, bit up against it really. Word for their fans, absolutely dreadful. I mean, there's no noise there. It's awful. It's just like a day trip.
The Lardy boys. Yeah.
Oh, mate, it's awful. There was 1,300 in there. We took a load up there, all around the grounds. Made a load of noise with probably about 15 of us proper voices, and the ground was awful. I mean, even the bar area, I think it was like one person serving or something. It was ridiculous. It was like a crowd of 1,200, 1,300 in there.
They know the Hastings are coming. one person serving beer. Yeah.
Well, they knew Hastings were coming.
Yes, we have at least three.
Yeah.
not only 13 quid to get in on non-league day, it's £6 a pint. You're like, hang on.
Yeah.
Bit harsh, isn't it? So, yeah, that's awesome all over. And it was, but it's just a shame we was one kick away from the, and, at the end from getting a great draw and decent scenes at the end of the game. But if Dav had put that one away, but yeah, it's just shame.
Yeah, Orsham won't let me take my drum in either.
No,
you're not allowed to drum.
Yeah, I've had that at all.
Yeah. It's the neighbours, though. Come on.
The neighbours are the golfers.
Wangers.
It's like miles away.
We told in
Sturgis. And his house is a mile away.
It's the golfers and the horses. They're the two neighbours you have to worry about.
That's it.
We still had the drumsticks in the back of the stand, so we made a decent noise. So
I mean, they have. Yeah. I know you don't want to say it, Ben, but I do feel Horsham have developed into our Ashford. You know, like what we used to have with Ashford. That Horsham, they're just so. Hopefully, we can break that when we play them in the Sussex Cup final.
Yeah, I mean, they, to be honest,
they're a good team. They're a good side, though.
Couple of individual errors. We don't play well on 3G either. So because we train on grass, we play on grass all the time. That takes that little bit of time to get into the 3G surface, and it doesn't suit players like John Ufo, who's absolutely rapid when the ball's just pinging off the surface and straight out of play. So, but yeah, we have to cope with those things, sadly. But yeah, it's just we don't really play well on it. But yeah, like I say, they weren't overly that much better than us. I think they were just a bit more experienced sides. We're quite a young side overall.
Nice to see Crotwell get a goal since his return.
Yeah, it was good. Good little bit of individual brilliance. There's go past his man, and then obviously it took a deflection on the way in across kind of a cross shot really. But yeah, he done well. But yeah, a bit frustrating after Hornchurch. But it's all about Haringey away on Friday. So get the ball back rolling again and crack on, and then focus on Monday. So hopefully 6 points.
Still spitting feathers that they changed that game. You know, it was a Saturday game up to a couple of weeks ago, and I was going to be there, but changed it to Friday.
I booked Friday half day just in case, because I know they often do that sort of thing. So
yeah, I couldn't get up. What were you saying, Rob?
I was going to say that our cabbage patch of a pitch that John probably recognised when he came down the other day. the best side we've had on that pitch this season was your lot. I mean, obviously you took us apart, but
this is upsetting me. This is upsetting me, Rob. Go on, carry on, please.
No, seriously. What often watch games there, and you think, oh, it's hard to play on this surface. Like, you can understand why it's like aerial ping pong, but when you came, you absolutely destroyed us on that pitch. And I haven't seen anyone else who was well on that pitch. And it's a very difficult pitch. It's super heavy. It's really bumpy. It's literally like a cabbage patch, you know. So I'm not surprised on the solid artificial surface, your lads didn't particularly, you know, some of your players, you know, maybe didn't cope so well on it with the bounce and stuff. But yeah, you didn't have any problems on our pitch, that's for sure.
I know, I weren't at the game, was I? I was bloody missed it, which I was reminded about five times.
I wish I'd missed
times.
It, mate. It ruined my Christmas.
That is the joys of football.
I was there. It was actually a decent performance, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. But then again, that suits us, the grass, and to be honest, and the ball holds up a bit more, and it suits the quick players like John Ufa.
Yeah.
Like I say, he's rapid, Freddie Leg flying down. But when you play on the lightning fast surfaces of likes of even Ashford as well, was absolutely rapid as well. That new surface over there, we didn't play well.
It's
there.
Really good.
It's good surface, but we struggle with it.
You've been to Chatham yet?
Yeah, won at Chatham.
We won at Chatham.
Yeah, we won at Chatham.
No, we haven't been there yet.
Yeah, well, hopefully you win at Chatham as well.
Hopefully you do, yeah, definitely.
Chatham. Right, what, Aaron?
But yeah, overall...
Ben, go on, carry on.
Overall, yeah, I'm positive that we can finish the season strong, but it's not essential that we go up, because I want to go up when we're ready to go up, to be honest. But if we get... It's all about getting some crowds in and get a bit of power football, and then hopefully extra games, and then obviously we've got the trip to the Amex at the end of the season to look forward to.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thanks, Ben. But
all good fun.
Yeah. But Aaron, last but not least, hashtag, talk to me about it.
We've been okay. We've had, it's been all right. I weren't there on the weekend against Canvey. I was at the cup final in Luton, which was amazing day.
What cup final? What cup final?
Our women's team played Newcastle at Luton in the FA Women's Defa League Cup.
Oh, all right. And you won?
It was, 2-1.
Oh, well done.
With about, 4,000 plus Newcastle fans, with about like 15, 20 of us lot was going crazy. But no, that was honestly one of the best days of my life, genuinely. It was just, it was so good. All the players come straight over to like all of us lot and stuff. They knew where we were. Yeah, it was just superb day. And I watched the video at the Canberra game and yeah, John, your centre-back had a stinker for Toby's goal. It was played back to the defender. He slipped Toby's ticket off him, slotted it in the corner. But to be fair, your keeper looked on fire that game from the highlights.
Yeah, he's not a bad little keeper. He's had his critics this season, which is a shame because he's a nice bloke. Only young, still about 20, only turned 24 on Tuesday. But yeah, he can be good when he wants to be.
Yeah. And then we played Potter's Bar, which again was, we first half, we scored 2 goals, 2-0 lead. Everyone's going like, oh yeah, let's go. We're all happy. Hopefully we beat Potter's Bar this time. We then score a goal, which Lana disallows, because apparently it didn't go over the line, when very, very clearly did. It hit the crossbar, diagonal down into the goal, bounced out. Lana, nowhere near anyway, just went, nah. Yeah. And then at half-time, he admitted he got it wrong. So, and they scored 3. We lost 3-2. So that sort of cost us a point, really. Then Haringey in the Velocity semi-final. I don't know how he won. We didn't play well at all. PK scored a penalty, which, to be fair, it was a penalty. And then we scored the 90th minute to win the game. But again, the first half of the game against Taringay, we just looked, generally, we looked like a team that had not really played, like, met each other before. We really just weren't good at all. I mean, even the second half, we got better, but we, at the end of the game, everyone was obviously going, yes, we're in a final, but half off was like, how the fuck we won that?
Was it, had they made a lot of changes for that game?
Ish. It was quite a rotated squad. Like, yeah and no. It was sort of, we were making subs early to sort of get more like players game time and stuff. And obviously then we brought on some players if did go to penalties. And obviously at the end we didn't need to go to penalties, which was decent. So we're in a cup final.
Where is that? Where is that, Aaron? Where is you Averley. Playing? It's at Averley.
Which is obviously our home ground next season.
Yeah, it's all brown envelopes, mate. Some brown envelopes being.
It's all rigged. It's all rigged.
Yeah.
Horrible ground.
I think, yeah.
That'd be nice for you, wouldn't it? Like, you think, obviously, you've had your women's team win a cup. That's you could have the men's team win a cup by the end of the season. Be a good achievement for club, wouldn't it?
Yeah, women's and the men's at the same like sort of ground. That's what I like, really. But obviously, they've got all their food. Their food is horrific at Averley. So bad.
I've got a story about Averley, but I'm not going to mention it yet again.
So Velocity Cup final against Chatham, which is great. Yeah,
you'll love that, Aaron, eh? You're going to love it.
Going to make sure I bring some more protection for that one. and then, yeah, again, just before that, obviously, we played Margate. Obviously, 1-4-2.
Yes.
It was an all right game. I mean, 3 points is 3 points. We knew that guy would score for you because he's crazy good. But yeah, just apart from that, it's been all right. I mean, we're sitting around mid-table, which obviously the goal for this season was just to secure ourselves in the league. So every single game, obviously, if we win, I'm going mental, like as everyone would do. But then obviously, if we lose, I'm not really too bothered because obviously it hurts to lose. But at the same time, whatever happens, we've reached our goal for the season.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not too fast. Obviously, we got Kingstonian on the weekend. Kingstonian away. We played them at home. I'm pretty sure we lost at home. We either lost or a draw at home. But obviously, that was right at the start of the season. And they've lost quite a few players since then. Obviously, you don't know what's going to happen with if they're doing the boycotts and stuff still at the ground. But no, it's going to be, for that one, I think it's going to be tough. Like, I don't see of the Kingstonian fighting that they want to get promoted. Oh, sorry, they want to stay up, sorry.
I was going to say, they got our job doing that, mate.
They want to stay up. So we can't walk into it like it's going to be like a walk in the park. It's going to be, they're going to make it tough for us. Yeah. But just as long as we, obviously, we'll be messing around and stuff, as long as we get the numbers and stuff, we'll be all right. It's just last game of the season. It's just looking forward to them. But going into every game, a win is a bonus. I said it when I first come onto the podcast, I don't really want us promoted. I don't think we're ready yet. Obviously, moving up divisions as fast as we have done is all well and good. But obviously, every league is an even bigger step. Like National South, we're competing. One, it'll get the crowds up because we're getting an average of about 100, 200 people, which is all right, but it's obviously not the greatest if you want to be playing in the national self. And obviously, if we did go up, we've got Avon next season, which is self-standard. But again, we'd just, it'd be the case of at one point we'd be going up and strap it down again. And obviously, everyone would be annoyed week in, week out, losing games. I think like a couple more seasons in this division and then maybe going up, just seeing how we are. Because we've got the players for it, 100%. But it's sort of the, as I said, it's just the upgrades we need to be doing, like financially and like crowd wise and gate money, that sort of stuff. But yeah, no, it's been all right. Like I think we'll have a strong finish to the season. I think we've got something big planned for the final home game of the season, which is making all these games count and obviously make as much noise as we can, even if theoretically speaking we haven't got much to play for.
Fair enough.
How many do you think you get more fans at Averley than you do at Bowers and Pitsy?
Yeah, because the problem with the Bowers, it's where it's positioned. Obviously, you've got the main Bowers and Pitsy, you've got Holbridge, you've got so many clubs around that obviously have already got the local fan base sort of thing. Whereas with us, obviously, where we started out on YouTube and stuff, it's sort of like getting people coming. We've got people coming from London, obviously, I'm coming from like Southend way. So moving to Averley, obviously, we're nearer to London. Obviously, they're paying to get to the public transport, but where we're nearer to London, I think it will attract more people in to come.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I heard we played Kingstonian away a couple of weeks ago. Went up there and I heard that we were beating 4-1, so it was all right. It wasn't too bad. It was all right. No, but I heard that they are massively doing a lot of budget cuts at the club. They played a lot of kids against us, like young kids, like 17, 18. We were on apparently like £20 a week. So anyone that's playing Kingstonian in their running, you got 3 points. So I think you should be all right.
You'd be surprised though, mate. They've bloodied a few noses. They went and beat Dunedin.
Yeah, I mean, we're not taking anything for granted. We've got like Dartford Academy, because Ben runs the Dartford Academy, and I think we've got four of their academy players plus a couple of our under 21s. Yeah. We've got that. I mean, one of the man of the match from a couple of weeks back couldn't give him his man of the match bottle because he was underage.
Yeah, we've been quite lucky. We've managed to get a couple of young kiddies from AFC Wimbledon recently on loan. One being Kai Jennings, who's 18, played 3 games, I think, for us, scored and got an assist. I think it's just exciting when you've got young kids playing in our divisions, really, because you can clearly see like the potential that a lot of these young kids have got playing in Eastman Prem as well. So,
yeah,
I'm all for it. Yeah. Always all for it.
Just quick point before we finish up. I don't know if any of your clubs are doing it as well. I know that we're supposed to be bringing back the Reserve League because we don't have one. We used to have under 23s last season. That then stopped. Ben, that's still happening, isn't it? I'm not saying something ain't happening, is it?
Yeah, I think there's talk of going back into over under 23s league again next year.
Or reserve league, wouldn't it?
Or reserve league, because we need something. It's obviously beneficial for the ones sitting on the bench a lot and not getting proper game time. So, it's a must, I think. I think it will happen.
Have you all got under 23?
We haven't. It's something we need, really, because we've had more squad for a good few years now. And to have some sort of more local boys than that, even if they just sort of propped up the bench a bit, to have that chance to play with us. I mean, I'll keep in contact with a friend of mine. He used to actually be Canby's captain a couple of years back, a boy called Mike Spinner. He's over at Grays Athletic now. But he did, I think when he was younger, when we did used to have a little sort of under 23s academy system, he came up through that. He was one of the last players to do so. So he's always been in that mentality of, oh, I'd love to see that back at Canby. But obviously, yeah, we're still going to keep making light bills on, apparently, allegedly. And yeah, I don't know if that any time soon. But it's something I'd love to see, a couple more local boys just doing bits for the club. It'd be lovely.
No, it would be.
It'd be interesting. It'd be interesting for the clubs that ain't got 23s if they implement a 23s division to sort of back end or mirror our division. How many clubs can't fulfil that? Because we've only got an 18 as high as we go at the moment, and we've been filling 18s into our first team the last few games just to fill a squad. So yeah, that'd be interesting anyway. It'd be good to see if it happens, because like I said, nothing better than seeing youngsters come through the ranks.
Yeah,
so
no, absolutely.
But yeah.
Well, yeah, we've got reserves.
Go on, Aaron, quick.
We're trying to get, obviously, so we've got the majority of us are going on a Saturday, obviously going on the Sunday to the women's games. They obviously are reserved and we'll be on the Friday. It was obviously streamed on YouTube and everything. But there's a bunch of us, obviously, the guys who go Saturday, Sunday, also try and get down on a Friday, obviously, to give the reserves a sort of like atmosphere you'd get at like a Saturday game. Obviously, our reserves sometimes play away on the Saturdays, which obviously then we can't get to because we're watching the first team. But obviously, on a Friday or whenever we play like midweek, we always try and get down to make some sort of noise, get behind the players, obviously, and just sort of like, as I said, just get them feeling like what a first team sort of atmosphere would be like as they're going in. But no, the reserve top of the division at the moment for us, we're doing quite decent.
Billy Cove, the manager of your reserves.
Yeah,
I mean,
Bill Cove, yeah.
Yeah, I love him. He's a top bloke. I've had a good chat for a couple of years back, sort of COVID years. Yeah, he's almost like a bit of the non-league sort of Alan Sugar now in terms of how he picks out all the talents and that, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's quality, Bill.
Right, then. On that note, let's finish this up for 1 week. Thank you very much, Aaron from Hashtag, Terry from Margate, John from Canby, Harvey from Lewis, Gabs from Enfield, Mark from Whitehawk, Mr. Bennett from the mighty Hastings, and of course Rob from Folkestone, which I will be seeing you, Rob, yes, Folkestone, mate. Yes, a few beers Monday, Bank Holiday Monday.
Yeah.
excellent. Anyway, I'll see you all at a game. Take care. Good luck on Friday or Saturday, whenever you're playing.
Cheers, Chris.
Cheers, mate.
Good luck.
That's it for another episode, SBTS fans. If you want to get in contact with this podcast, the email is hufcpod@gmail.com. The Twitter, which is SBTSpod. Otherwise, go to the YouTube. Over 4 years of content on there. There's so many other ways to listen. However you get your podcast, we're on all platforms. Or go to the link tree, which is SBTS podcast, and subscribe. It's all free. Remember, get yourselves to a game and support local football, whoever and wherever you're watching. And apart from that, see you at the game.